welcome to another episode of The Greatest Pod, where we discuss and debate what makes something great. I'm Ron Swallow.
I'm Ed Greer. And today we are going to talk about writer versus artist. Who is more important in the creation of a comic book? Obviously, it's both. But we are going to discuss and debate the merits. And if there was one that was more important, why would that be? So, Ron, you're a person who, honestly, when you were a kid, I don't think you really were too fucking concerned with writer or artist. You were motivated by characters and stories or whatever. And you, acknowledging where those came from at all wasn't really your bag. And it's funny because that's exactly how it started in comics. There had to be a big fight. Go to your history to find out exactly what dates it was, or who the fuck did it and shit. But there was, I'm telling you empirically, a big ass fight to even get credits put on comic books. It was that like machinery that existed to just sort of shit people's talents out in the form of these stories so that nobody gave a fuck who did them anyway. Yeah. So that's where we start. And now we're all, now it's almost great that we're at a period where we're talking about who's the best writer, who's the best artist, what's more important, writer or artist. And back in the days, nobody even thought about that shit.
Well, you know, and it got this. The reason I was thinking about this is because of the recent Hawkeye TV show, which we've discussed a couple of times on our Patreon, which, of course, by the way, if you want to join our Patreon, patreon.com/thegreatestpod, very easy. You can get on there. Check it out. Can hear this Hawkeye episodes. What's happening on the Hawkeye episode is Matt Fraction worked with the team who made this Hawkeye show, but the graphics that they use at the beginning of it and a lot of the way it's shot, the feel of it is very much like David Aja or Aja. I'm bad with names, as you all know.
That's Aja, but yeah.
Yeah, David Aja's art to what he did in the run with Matt Fraction. And it got me thinking about, and he didn't get any money from it, by the way, zero money from it. And Matt Fraction doing pretty well. And it just got me thinking about like, what's it, are artists less important in this scheme? I think, how do people measure that? Because clearly right now, people seem to think that writers are more important. Because the writers seem to be the guys who get the big bucks.
Comic book writers, unless they're huge, like Neil Gaiman, like, you know, Alan Moore, whatever, comic book writers' page rates are generally lower than the artist's page rate. Because obviously, the one thing you cannot dispute is that more labor goes into making one comic book page than writing one comic book page. Because you can write one comic book page as panel one, the army comes. Panel two, the army fights Godzilla. Panel three, Godzilla defeats the fucking army. Somebody got to draw that shit.
Yeah.
It's a weird ecosystem. The writer obviously needs the artist. But a lot of times the artist needs somebody to write something that they can draw. They can draw anything. And when you can draw anything, sometimes it's hard to come up with just what you can, what you want to draw. What kind of stories you want to tell with the way that you like to draw. There's a lot of things that artists, you know, especially if they're great technicians, might not have in regards to storytelling. That's why the people who can do both are so prized. We'll get to that point later. But just going back to artists. So like artists get paid a little bit more upfront, you know, they're seen as a little bit more important in that regard. Like you can't put the book out unless the artist is done drawing. So they factor in release dates going like, is this artist slow? Da, 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 da. So, but the writers, and like I was saying in creator owned, sometimes they'll hire an artist to do a thing that they own creatively, but they won't have the artist co-own the property. It'll be like my property. I'm doing it with you. I'll pay you out of my own pocket to do the shit, but you don't own like the copyright and shit. I don't have to tell you when we're making a movie out of this motherfucker. I might include you because we're buddies and shit, but like if I don't, no big deal. You know what I mean? And so sometimes I think that sort of mentality has bled into the big two comics. Like if you wrote it, then you get all this credit for it. And if you drew it, you were just a guy who were assigned and paid well to do a job. And got your job done, but your job exists because this writer came up with this take on Hawkeye.
Yes, exactly. It's just a bummer to see someone like work their like sweat and put their sweat into this, the sweat and tears, as they like to say, into something, and then not get the same money as the writer. And especially because a lot of times the writer and the artist, they're working together. Like that's something that that I think gets left out in this conversation, is that a lot of times the writer's like, well, this is my idea, and this is how I would like to look. And the artist is like, that's great. I love that idea. How about also this and maybe this? And they go, oh, yeah, that works great. I can, you know, like I can see myself drawing this. So I think this would be great to do for your page. You know what I mean? And I think it would make the story move a little bit better from panel to panel or whatever. And that type of thing is very important. Many different people drew for Sandman. But recently, Neil Gaiman put out an audio version. There's word on the street that there will be a television series of The Sandman. I'm sure some of the style of the comics is going to be used. I don't know whose style is going to be used, but somebody's style is going to be used in that. And that author, that artist will probably see no money from it. How do we feel about that?
Well, they're going to get an extra special thanks, and they're going to get told that they can come to the – and it's weird how different people treat different people, though. Like, that sounds like a stupid essence. This is what I'm trying to explain. Brian Hitch, right? Brian Hitch gets invited to Marvel-type shit. Like, when Brian Hitch's kids were little, they got to meet Thor and shit because he drew the fucking Ultimates, which everybody knows – the Marvel Universe is the MCU is more or less based on the Ultimates, down to having Samuel Jackson be Nick Fury, Thor looking like, you know, Chris Hemsworth, basically. Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man is in there. You know what I mean? Like, because back in the days, Iron Man was a smooth cat, but he wasn't really he wasn't necessarily a quick wit. He was a smooth guy. And he would always have a nice little maybe one-liner to say, but he wasn't constantly assessing people and tearing them down with this like optimal efficiency, like Robert Downey Jr.'s performance of Tony Stark. But the Iron Man in Mark Miller's version of the Ultimates, which was a reboot basically for the Ultimates universe of the Avengers, it's all there, man. And that's when we could talk about writers too, right? Did Mark Miller was, I think, back in the days before he left to form his own company, he was part of their like story conferences when they would have like retreats. Comic books, sometimes they'll have these retreats where like they'll bring in luminary artists and writers, or they'll bring in their whole staff, and or they'll bring in their whole staff and like get them all motivated, like a team building ass exercise about what are we going to do with our comics in the next coming years. Oh, I think we should break Batman's back. Okay, who's going to break it? This fucking luchador. You know what I'm saying? Oh yeah, luchador going to break Batman's back. What the who's going to replace Batman? Dick Grayson, of course. No, not Dick Grayson. This one guy that I was editing in my other comics, and we did a couple things. People kind of like this Azrael guy. Azrael's going to be Batman. That's fucking dumb. And they argue it out. Right. They have these fucking meetings like that. And like in those type of settings, Mark Miller was tossing out some of the hottest shit in the world, I guess, because you remember when he was he did Civil War. The Civil War is based upon the shit that he did. Fucking the conceptions of everybody in the MCU is based on what he did. And Brian Hitch drew all those. Brian Hitch gets to go to set. Brian Hitch gets to do all this hot shit. But a lot of people like David Aja don't get to do nothing. So it's like, I don't know what, you know what I'm saying? What's the line of demarcation between you get to go on the set and meet Thor because you drew some shit and you're left out in the cold because you totally designed a thing that Disney's making millions of dollars off of. Look at all the Ultimates. Look at the Ultimates and tell me those aren't the Avengers. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, but again, he did that work for hire and he got paid a certain amount of money and he got certainly special thanked, I think, in the first Avengers movie and shit like that.
Yeah.
But then again, he had, and the thing is with his creator owned comics, he tends to have the artist be co-creator because he knows that you're not going to, number one, it's just fair. That's number one. It's just fair that way. And number two, if you get a great artist to do your little book you dashed off and sold to Netflix, it's got such a better chance of being a very memorable comic if you have a great artist on it. You know what I mean? No matter how great of a writer you are, if you're a great, great writer. I remember when Warren Ellis, who's in a lot of trouble these days, but I remember when Warren Ellis used to write comics and have them drawn by people who weren't Brian Hitch and weren't some of these big luminaries. I got to say, I really didn't care about them that much. I didn't care about those comics. And some of those comics had some of these great mind-bending stories and all this different jazz, but it's not drawn by Brian Hitch, man. Write something drawn by Brian Hitch and I'll read it. You know what I'm saying? And that's just kind of the way it is. So I don't know that the average fan, though, really thinks of it that way. Even if they do like certain artists, I think they're just like, well, if it's somewhere between Jorge Jimenez and Oliver Copiel, I'll read it. It doesn't matter if it's one of those guys specifically, Greg Capullo or Jim Lee. I really don't care. You know what I mean? Type of guys, which I might find myself in that category, honestly. Like if one of those type of guys drew it, I'd be fine with it. But like then there's people like Frank Quitely or Greg Tocchini or Mark Teixeira, where it's like you can't see somebody else drawing that comic the way that they would draw it. You have to match them up with those comics specifically. Brian Michael Bendis is another one of those guys who has invented things that are going to be part of movies and TV shows and has sold his own TV shows. But it's just like, I don't know how making up stuff for comics for the big two is worth it in the long run. I kind of, my brain is broken about that. You know what I'm saying? Like how much money would it take for you to basically, Mark Miller is so successful and he hasn't made a tenth of what he would have got if his work on the Avengers was basically taken as an original thing that he made up that they had to kind of license to make all these things off of. Think about how much money he would have made if those things were considered that instead of so-called work for hire. It's just, I mean, and that's why work for hire contracts exist, right? So people can't come back and be like, hey, I laid those 14 bricks in the Sistine Chapel. You got to pay me $10,000 to go inside. It's like, that ain't exactly how it works, bricklayer. You know what I mean? But treating artists that way is wild, you know? Like they're giving you actual residuals for sales of shit that you did. Supposedly DC's record on that is like way better than a lot of other companies. And I think at this point, better than Marvel's. Because I don't know how many Bill Mantlow type situations are happening in DC. Bill Mantlow famously created Rocket Raccoon, and he got into an accident in the 80s, and he's needed a lot of medical help since then. And they're always doing like Kickstarters and GoFundMes and comic book, the Heroes Coalition and shit coming in to like help him out and shit because he's all fucked up. But he's like, dude, Disney has made so much fucking money off of Rocket Raccoon and all this different shit. They could like take care of this dude for life. No problem.
Not a problem at all.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, ugh. Like, why is that, dude? You know what I mean? You would think you put these things out. But again, that's the thing about comics. Comics, last episode we talked about, me and Bill talked about how there's a conception of comics as this sort of throwaway pamphlet bullshit medium. And a lot of the ways that we've paid people, a lot of the ways we acknowledge people's artistic contributions, a lot of the ways that you just handle comic book material, period.
Yeah.
Harkens back to those days when it was so disrespected. So like, you know, the laws haven't been revised.
I don't know, man. It's one of those things. Now we're talking about it, I'm getting more and more frustrated, man. Now I'm thinking everybody's getting fucked. Brian Hitch, Garth Ennis, all of them are getting fucked.
Well, and then the thing that's really interesting is like, though, I think the big two could very easily be like, okay, bro, let me tell you something. Your book is not going to be The Walking Dead. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just not. So come over here and feed your fucking kids with this money I'm going to give you for doing this run of Hawkeye, this run of this run of that. And let's go back to the argument, though. Artist versus writer. Now, on the writer side, the artist wouldn't have a job without the writer. That's number one.
Yeah.
On the artist side, the book can't come out without the artist's, you know, contribution. On the writer side, well, if you could make this contribution, you would, wouldn't you? You have all the skills in the world. You got all the perspective grids in the world. Where are the fucking stories? Oh, you got one about an alien that comes and meets a little boy? That's E.T. You got one about a guy who embraces his destiny and defeats a big ball in space and blows it up to save everybody? That's Star Wars. You have no ideas, dude. Sit your ass down and draw winged unicorns of shit all day on your Instagram, or you can apply yourself to this funky ass script that I wrote. There's a lot of that going on with how much writers are actually getting paid and getting recognized, and the fact that they are books. Look at who writes a book. A book is written by the writer. Yeah. So a lot of times these goofy ass places will just put, like, instead of acknowledging that comics are written, quote unquote, by a person and another person, a person on illustrations and a person on writing, a comic book can't be anything other than written by those two people, because you can write a comic book. Are you going to publish the comic book script? No, you're publishing a comic book. It has to. So all that to say, there are places who just say, who wrote the book? That's the person whose name is going to be on the spine. And that's the section of the comic book store we're going to put it in. And that's it. And it's kind of a really myopic thought, but you could see where they're coming from, but it's still fucked up.
Yeah. I just, you know, but here's the thing. What I'm thinking about is that, like, I could tell you when I was young, the first thing that drew me in to the eventually enjoyment of stories was the art.
Of course.
It was
catches
this,
you.
Yeah, this Spider-Man uniform is the coolest thing I've ever seen. It's mm-hmm. just it's got webs on it. He's a spider. He's a man. And this is this is great. You know, like, that's the first thing that drew me in was just this. I think I've told the story maybe a little bit before, but, like, one of the first comics I ever bought was going into the Circle K, where I bought a soda that a 10-year-old. First off, I just roamed around Albuquerque by myself. So I walked like the block and a half or two blocks down to the Circle K that was near my apartment complex. I'd made a 50 cents to go and buy a 32 ounce soda from a very irresponsible cashier who let me buy that 32 ounce soda. And I had had an extra 50 cents or a dollar in my pocket. And I saw the Spider-Man comic book that was about reading, and it had dinosaurs, and it had Spider-Man swinging around a dinosaur. And I was like, this is one of the coolest things I've ever seen in my whole life. I am buying this thing. And then I bought it and I read it. And now that I think about it, it probably wasn't even a good story, but it hooked me immediately with the colors. There was a bright green dinosaur, and you had the red and the blue and the little black, you know, webbing. And it just drew me in immediately. The art was so important to me as a kid. And I can say for now, sometimes when I'm looking through comic books, I'll open a couple pages, and if I like the art, I'll take a chance. I won't even know if the writer, who the writer is, or if it's good. I'll take a chance because I like how it looked. And to me, that puts the artist on a way higher, more important thing. And I guess that's a personal thing, but I think a lot of people feel that way.
Well, I mean, especially in comics, you know what I mean? And again, it's one of these things where it seems open and shut for comics until you realize that, like, you're John Burns, you're Frank Millers, you're people who can actually, on a month-to-month basis, make up and draw comics. There's like 17 of them. At any given time, there's 17 to 20 of them that can do it at the level where everybody's going to come when they do it. And there might be less than that as far as if we're talking about stars. Like, let's name them right now. Frank Miller, Mike Mignola. If John Byrne came thundering back with, like, a super dope, probably it'd have to be a version of trademarked characters. He couldn't come back with a reissue of anything he didn't create or owned and take over the world like that. He'd have to do, like, John Byrne's Batman fights, Batman kills the Marvel Universe, drawn by John Byrne. That would sell. That would sell. Damn, yep. That's some hot shit right there. Batman Kills the Marvel Universe. That's a fucking awesome book. They need to do that.
Great
shit.
Idea. Go hire. Go call John Byrne right now.
But you know what I'm saying? Like
Todd McFarlane, yeah. I guess, is also another guy who's up there doing the writer and drawing and writing as well.
Yeah, you'd have to say that he's done a lot of issues, but he's also only like written a bunch of issues. You know what I'm saying? Like he's written like 300 damn Spawns, but he's probably drawn in 102 or something, something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a great point.
So it's like we're talking about like people who can sit their ass down. Neil Adams is a drawing motherfucker, yeah. And he's written a lot. But bro, when you just set him off on his own, he makes things like Continuity Studios, which is a great like idea. Like Continuity Studios having a bunch of people who do like dope ass drawings for advertisements, do a shared comic book universe under your umbrella and your supervision. And frankly, kind of in your style, that's a super great style of drawing comics. It's a great idea. It's an empirically great idea. But the stories aren't there.
Yeah.
And that's where we come back to this thing of like, bro, you could draw your motherfucking ass off all day, but consistent success in comics comes from good stories. Stories that could even survive a fill-in artist every now and again. And that's where the writer comes sneaking back in, dude. The origination of some of the ideas that are worth all these funky fresh, like the reinterpretations, right, of big two characters. The Fraction thing, let's talk about that one just because it's right on top of our minds. Hawkeye has been so many things in comics, dude. Hawkeye trained the West Coast Avengers with like Moon Knight when he was in his rapper phase. People who are really hardcore Moon Knight fans will remember that Moon Knight used to rock gold. He used to rock gold everything. He had gold anklets, gold ankhs that he would toss at people, gold like shuriken things he used to, moons and she used to throw at people. And this is like after his period where all of that stuff was white or bone colored. He went to this gold phase and he moved to the West Coast and he was on the West Coast Avengers with Tigra and I think Wonder Man. And Hawkeye was and Hawkeye and Mockingbird as a couple were more or less, it seems like they were, oh, and the Vision was on that team and Scarlet Witch was on that team. So like they were, and I think US Agent was on that team.
Yeah.
So like that were this weird team of Avengers, and Hawkeye and Mockingbird were basically their parents telling them what to do and being like the leaders and shit. And he went from that to being like just sort of this weird, back in the days, he was a villain. He entered the Avengers or in Tales to Astonish or some shit like that. He entered fighting the Avengers as a villain who gets reformed. And he was trained by this dude, the swordsman, to be a bad guy. I mean, and to be a carnival like act and shit like that. And then they got into crimes and shit and they fought the Avengers. And then he saw the Avengers being dope and was like, I'd rather be like them. And that was what happened. So it's funny the parts that they kept in Hawkeye. Anyway, all I'm saying is fucking Fraction makes him this super down to earth, deaf dude. I think he started going deaf in, I think, the 90s comics. They hinted at it a little bit, but he really hammered it home, gave him this down home, like street level. He's not shooting his bow at aliens in this. He's shooting his bow at tracksuit bros. He made up all that shit to, and the whole plot to put over Kate Bishop as his like buddy Hawkeye who like took over for him when he was gone and shit like that. Them, it's just that take. David Aja's art is so fucking amazing and his graphic sense is beautiful, but it starts with that take on Hawkeye, that new take on what haven't we seen Hawkeye do? We've seen Hawkeye shoot Thanos in the face with arrows and shit. We haven't seen him fight a dude around the corner. How deadly is Hawkeye fighting around the way, guys? Hawkeye's like fucking Bullseye and 60% of Daredevil fighting regular people.
Yeah.
That's amazing. He's fucking him up. Whooping
that ass.
Yeah.
And he's still having a difficult time too, though, which is
because he's a person. Yeah.
He's a person. It makes it a lot more I don't know, intriguing, relatable, all of that good stuff. And we talk some, like I mentioned earlier, we talk some about how good this this Hawkeye series is. But at the same time, like, you know, at the beginning credits of that, they're basically using somebody mm-hmm. else drew it, but they're basically using somebody mm-hmm. who imitated David Aja's art. So, yeah, that's my problem, I think, in that situation is like, hey, we're clearly imitating this. You didn't draw it, but we're imitating your art because we didn't want to pay you probably what you deserve to do it. We paid some.
And the crazy part is, why wouldn't, like, I think it's so weird that people think that comic book artists can't contribute to, like, concept art and credit sequences and different shit like that. Like, let them have a job designing it, and then you tweak it how you need for that medium of credit art. Like, well, this guy doesn't know how to work the 3D program that we use to make the moving snowflakes that turn into shuriken that slice up the ninjas. He doesn't know how to, but he knows how to say, I want snowflakes to turn into shurikens and I want the ninjas to get chopped up. And he can draw a little storyboard of that. You can give him some fucking change. You can give him a fucking credit on the thing.
Yeah.
Come on. There's fucking a bunch of people's fucking nephews got credits on this fucking thing. And the guy who drew the comics can't get a credit on it. That's the part that kills me. I don't necessarily know if I'm on like the old John Byrne team of fuck it, you signed the contract, eat a dick, you know, just to do your thing. I don't know if I'm on that side of it, but I am saying it is almost every artist's responsibility to take those times that you are in the sunlight of doing a big two character, take those times and really in that time that you're doing that, be developing your own shit so that right off of it, you can get that lickety split. Be like, the artist of Hawkeye is doing this now. And it's like a big fucking deal and you did it. And that's way easier said than done. So yeah, the one way you can support David Aja is to go out and look at his book. He wrote with Ann Nocenti's on the script and he came up with the idea and he's drawing it. It's called The Seeds. And it's published by Dark Horse, not one of the big two. So go give your fucking money. I think Dark Horse gives you more Skrilla. And when you make, when they make movies off of it, I think you get a cut of that money too. So, yeah. So, but dude, the whole point of this conversation, though, in regards to writer versus artist in comics is, I think what's wild is, okay, a comic can be good if a good artist works from a bad script, you can still have a semi-decent comic.
Yeah.
But I'd say that only lasts a couple issues. Because I've definitely I stopped reading All-Star Batman because it was bad. You know what I'm saying? And Jim Lee was drawing the fuck out of that book. But it like didn't make any fucking sense. You know what I mean? It was one of the missteps my boy Frank was going through during his tumultuous period of being a fucking psycho. You know what I mean? And I just, it was fucking crazy how bad that comic book was and how well drawn it was. Cause like there was you could all of a sudden see the dissonance between somebody great at drawing something bad. It was just hitting you. And like back in the days when the image stuff started coming apart a little bit in regards to guys not being able to hit their deadlines and guys just doing all this weird shit, a lot of those comics weren't good comics to like read, you know, because they were trying to, you know, they were young guys coming to grips with the fact that like making up stories to make fucking sense and publishing them every 30 days is super fucking hard. And that's why the big boys have done it for a long. I'm not trying to say that DC and Marvel are better than them on any level. They had more infrastructure than them, though. And to pretend that you have the infrastructure to compete with something like that fresh out the gate, it's literally impossible. And I really think they would have done better to especially think about this. In the speculator market, right? Wouldn't it have been awesome for Jim Lee and them to sell like $10, 50-page comics every year for like $100 or something and have them be small print runs? You know what I'm saying? Like $10, 55-page comics that came out like every 6 months and they only printed up a small amount. and there'd be occasional reprintings if it was really out of hand, the demand. Yeah. Think about how much those would have sold in a speculator-driven era. You know what I'm saying? Like, these are the only Jim Lee comics that are going to exist this year. There's two of them. They're 55 pages each. Out of all this crazy shit happens at this part one, part two of Wildcats Destructicon, you know. And it's like 110 pages. You got it for the year. It's like basically more or less a graphic novel in two parts. And there's only a certain amount. They would have made money hand over fucking fist. And they would have been able to keep that schedule up. Yeah. But because they were trying to ball like Curry, because they were trying to ball like Marvel, they decided to try to, like, you know, do all this platinum covers and all this wild shit. And just they didn't have enough stories for it. They had all the art in the world. They had an army of kids in La Jolla drawing exactly like them. And it didn't equal a cohesive universe that could, like, actually sustain selling comics to the point where all the Wildstorm characters, again, are DC characters now. How the fuck did that happen? Because they had to go to where the stories live. You know what I'm saying? It's fucking crazy that way.
Oh.
I mean, Neil Gaiman made up Angela, and he could have kept her for himself. He made up Angela for the Image guys, and I guess Todd McFarlane's contract with him wasn't very good, and so he ended up taking his character back and going to Marvel and selling it to Marvel. So now Angela, who originated in a Spawn comic, I think Spawn, I don't know, 9 or something, as like this angelic person that fights and kills Spawns, now she's a Marvel character because Neil Gaiman was like, let me just take this change real quick because I ain't about to write no more about this bitch. I don't really care. Like, because I think he was coming into Marvel to do a lot of shit like the Eternals or shit like that. And so I think he, like, brought Angela with him as part of this deal to, like, kind of jump shit from DC and go over to Marvel and take a little spin. And so let's talk about some of the writers and artists that, now that we look at it, really and impressed us in regards to, like, which one's more important. Because I'll just say one off the bat for me. Art-wise, I really do think I would read anything Frank Quitely draws, because of the fact that he interprets scripts in his own way. Like, he figures out the blocking of different scenes. Like, literally somebody could write something hella boring and Frank Quitely is going to draw the hell out of it. He could draw the hell out of somebody getting a book from the library in a way that's, like, dynamic and interesting. And I think that he's almost writer proof to me, which is why I wish he would just do his own comics. Because he's writer-proof, man. He could write the most boring scripts ever and turn them into great comics because of how good he can draw and how well he could tell stories with his art. You know what I'm saying? If somebody opens up an envelope and there's a sonogram of the demon baby that they thought they'd left behind in Indiana, he knows how to draw the look on the guy's face when he sees that.
Yeah.
And that's fucking rare. A lot of people just draw gritted teeth and cross-hatching on their fucking faces, and everybody looks like a 55-year-old man with a bunch of, you know, tension lines around their eyes and forehead, and everybody's gnashing their teeth. A lot of people can just do that. A lot of millionaire artists can basically only do that. And this guy's doing, you know, ennui on people's faces.
That's amazing. That reminds me of the Jared Padalecki acting. Grind your teeth and make a long, serious face, as compared to Jensen Ackles acting, which is funny and way more nuanced than you would expect.
Well, who's better, the writer or the artist of Walker, Texas Ranger?
I don't think anyone's good in that situation, Ed. I think it got canceled after, like, the second episode. I'm not sure, though. There's no roundhouses. Okay. Anyways, well, speaking of roundhouses, I'm going to say he's been on our podcast, so maybe I'm biased, but I love watching Jeff Johnson's art. his fight scenes are so dynamic that as long as he draws a fight scene in it, I'm fucking down. So just do that. I'm cool with that but you know how I am. I love I'll watch a movie that is not good and enjoy it just because there's a great fight scene in it. You know how much I love Rapid Fire. And I'm telling you, Rapid Fire story-wise, is probably not a great movie, but the martial arts in it is really, really well done. There are some very, very good fight scenes in it, and it makes the movie enjoyable for me. And that same thing happens with me for good action in a comic book. Good action in a comic book will sell me every time. Jeff Johnson pulls it off great. I'm gonna put him out there as a guy I want to see doing even more creator-owned stuff, and makes a comic book that much better.
Well, yeah, his shit is just mad laborious, dude, man. He really, when he commits to a book, he could do a few at a time and shit, but like, he really has to lay it down like, dude, I'm going to really go into this world. I'm going to design all this fucking hot shit for this world. I'm going to really make sure that every single thing makes sense in this world. So I love the fact that he dedicates himself that hard, and that's what makes a lot of those scenes pop, is like, people are getting fucked up in real environments. People are getting fucked up using real techniques. I think also some of the people that draw us into comics, you know, as artists and writers, I think of a guy like Alan Davis, right? Alan Davis has drawn so many things for DC and so many things for Marvel. And done. He's worked with Chris Claremont on X-Men. He drew one of the best X-Men animals. Alan Davis can literally draw anything. Alan Davis came up with his own kind of creator own thing, published through Marvel UK, or he sold these characters to Marvel because he wanted to work with them. Whatever. There was this place called this team called the Clandestine, and they were like, I don't know, they were like basically X-Men, but also a family. So they're like X Fantastic Four family from England, basically. Yeah. With multidimensional shits, and like the dad was a super guy and the kids were super and all this different shit. Anyway, that dude's probably gotten a few special thanks, but his contribution to to DC and Marvel is so huge, man. It's you start really looking at all these work for hire dudes, I think the company would be bled dry by all these brilliant geniuses giving their life and work to these guys. They'd have to actually pay him. They wouldn't make so much profit.
Yeah. George Perez.
I mean, dude, George Perez. Ugh. Think about if George Perez got paid the amount. Like, because everything since the Crisis, like, they've milked Crisis's taint, you know what I'm saying, for fucking 30 years, 40 years at DC now.
Yep.
And if he didn't draw that book, ain't nobody reading that shit.
Yeah, 100% agreed. So, I just really thought it would be important for us to talk about how important collaborative art is in comics. The combination of writing something great, having good dialogue, putting the right space between gutters, the right kind of lettering for the situation,
We didn't even talk about the administrative people, dude. Because one of the first things you fucking said was the colors. Yep. We've been talking about people who don't necessarily do their own colors. We talk about people doing their own colors. We talk about Klaus Janson. We talk about Dan Panosian is doing his own colors these days on Canary. There's like a lot of these different, you know, Frank Quitely is doing some of his own colors and stuff. But like, people throughout the time, I remember Christy Scheel, I think it was her name. Christy Scheel, Sheely. Her and Glennis Oliver colored so many motherfucking old ass 80s comics on up through 90s comics, but I think neither one of them really fuck with digital shit, so they just got shit canned out of the industry, basically, or they work on some other type of art. It's really interesting how many colorists are the ones that are the unsung superheroes. We talk about writer versus artist. Colorists, there's so many huge colorists. Laura DePoy, I think her name was Laura, I think she changed it to Laura Martin after she got married. That lady is a just king shit colorist. There's a guy named Rico something. He works with the Kickstand Kids. There's all these Rico Enzi, I think is his name. There's a bunch of people who are just like these super fresh artists that aren't they don't do the line art. And the people who do the letters, you know, you've read a comic book with horrible letters. Mm-hmm. That take you out of the story. The comic book could be drawn competently. The scripting could be okay. And the letters fucked you up out of the book.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have one. That one Bad Boy by Frank Miller and Simon Beisley. That lettering is terrible in that fucking book, too.
You're right.
It's really fucking awful.
You're 100% right. The lettering in that is terrible. And it makes a difference. Like, all this stuff comes together so importantly in comic books that I'm going to go ahead and declare that in the writer versus artist, that it's even. I'm just going to call it even. I think they're both needed and needed just as importantly. And, you know, like, is this a little bit of a cop out? Maybe. But I'm going with it.
Well, I think, I don't know, maybe I might be controversial, dude, and say writer, just because the people that do writing and drawing the best are the biggest. The people who do the best drawings are not the best. The people who do some of the dopest. Go on ArtStation. Literally any of the top 1,000 people that you find on the website, art, go to art, to anybody within the sound of my voice, go to ArtStation, look at the top 1,000 things. Even if you're a shithead super critic like myself, you're going to find in that 1,000, probably 400 examples of art that, like, if you were to read a whole comic book in that art style, you would just cream your jeans over that shit. You'd be like, oh my God, this is the greatest shit of all times.
Yeah,
and those dudes 9 times out of 10 don't do comics because it's too fucking hard. It's hard to compose pictures in that way for comic books. First of all, like, a lot of these concept painters who could knock out 57 different iterations of a costume in 20 minutes using Blender and all types of shit like that. That's great. Draw me a guy sitting at a fucking table drinking some shit. Then the Green Goblin comes through, and then Aunt May's wheat cakes drop on the ground, and then Peter Parker does a flip, and then this, and then that. Do all of that and give it to me by the end of the day. They can't fucking do it, dude. And if they did do it, a lot of those pictures would be stodgy and stiff as fuck, or they wouldn't be the right picture to tell that particular story. And then you enter somebody like, we've been blowing Frank Miller for about 2 months now on this channel, but like, Frank Miller knows how to draw guys fighting each other over the jewel of the whatever the fuck. And he knows how to write captions that make you feel the intensity of, boy, I hope that this character gets the jewel over that character, because if this other character gets the jewel, the whole world's going to end. And he knows just the number of people who can do both.
That's the story I want to hear. The jewel story.
The jewel story, and it turns out to be a fucking CD of the artist jewel. So it's a CD, which is worthless, of jewel, which to me is worthless. And they're fighting vehemently over it because it's like the apocalypse or something. See, boom, it's the apocalypse, and that's the last piece of music on Earth. There you go. That's why it's interesting.
I love it.
The whole point is there aren't that many people. Bill Sienkiewicz, who I want to be on as a dude on this show. Over the course of time, he's done many of his own writing projects and stuff. It isn't even like when he fucks around with Frank, or when he fucks around with different writers. It's not like what he did on Moon Knight. It's not like what he did when he was working with Claremont. His self-made, self-published stuff that he works on by himself, it's awesome artistically, and it says something on this super high level, no doubt. But like, just can you draw Batman punching some guys? Can you just draw a human interaction? Can you draw all this different type of just regular human interaction shit and set up a big battle scene, but then set up this interior scene, but then do all the shit? There's a need for some direction in that. Yeah. And I just think that in the end, it's still a cop out, because I'm just saying the same thing you said. The writer artist is the champ in all this. The person that can draw what they see in their head and their stories. So people like Jeff Lemire. Jeff Lemire is not the best comic book artist by a damn sight. I'm not trying to be rude in that. He draws good enough to get across these ill-ass stories he has in his head. And to me, that's the most important part of comics. And that's what I would want people who are on the artist side of it, right? Who are just like, yo, the artist's so important. The artist's so important. That's great. But if you're an artist and all you learn how to do is draw pretty girls laying on different things, or jumping in these porn positions to shoot their guns or whatever, your comics aren't going to fuck with Matt Fraction's comics. Your comics aren't going to fuck with Neil Gaiman's comics. You know what I mean? And when we talk about sales, we talk about people remembering those stories, we talk about all that stuff, they're not going to be remembered like that, dude. You draw great guns. Like the comic book that I was going to do, Chick with a Gun in the Apocalypse. If I didn't put more, I'm in the process of putting a lot more gravitas under that and a lot of story, because I think that'll help that story so much more than me learning how to draw flak vests really good and learning how to draw muscle cars with turrets on them and shit. I need to do that to tell the story.
Yeah.
But I need to learn how to make this a fucking story to where I could draw it like crap and people would still like it and have people care. So like, I think that in the end, it's just obviously the writer needs the artist in this medium. That's just a fact of life. But if you motherfuckers ain't trying to do something people can feel, it doesn't mean anything. And that's why I think in this, it's like story is more important than writer or artist, honestly. Because there's story ideas that you could hand to a writer, right? And then like sometimes in editorial like comic book companies, that's exactly what happens. They'll come up with the idea, Spider-Man is a fucking clone. And somebody has to deal with that story idea. And they have to partner with somebody who gets that story idea and make the comic. So like, yeah, in the end, you are right and I am right. The gods of this medium can do both. And obviously, it's necessary for one to do both. But you can't discount it. Last thing I'll say is you can't discount concept.
Yep.
You can't discount concept. You can't discount pathos and the shit making people feel. If you have the concept down and you can make people feel, you could probably draw like shit and get your comic off the ground. You draw immaculately, you ain't got no dope concept, and your story ain't shit. Those first two issues might sell like gangbusters. And when you get bored and don't make any more and try to put out the third issue, you're going to find out that sitting your ass down and making a story would have been a better use of man hours than learning about the ambient occlusion off of the fucking knives that you taped to the character.
Fair enough. And I think that's where we'll end it, you guys.
Thank you for listening to another illustrative and well-written episode of The Greatest Pod.